As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He doesn't always play nice. And that's what gets you the information you need. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Right, we are back. Tim Bezbatchenko is the general manager of Toronto FC. They have a big match on Saturday against the Portland Timbers. And Tim Bezbatchenko will join us at 11:15. We'll talk about the big match, the return of Jermaine Defoe, and the now underway expansion of BMO Field. And I'll also ask Tim how the hell they're going to plan on getting fans into the stadium with the Gardner being shut down for the entire weekend. Ryan Dixon is the senior writer at Sportsnet Magazine. He's going to join us in studio. He will discuss Sportsnet Magazine's NHL preview, including his piece on Marc Bergevin's reload in Montreal, Victor Hedman's breakout in Tampa Bay, and the similarities between the Blackhawks and Kings. So Ryan Dixon will join us. The Sportsnet Magazine NHL preview issue should be on newsstands today or tomorrow. Today. There you go. You'll notice that it's got the great front cover with pictures of, I think, 45 or 50 NHL players on it. Everybody, pretty much, as Travis McKenzie says. So take a look at it. Your favorite player will be in there someplace. It'll be like that. It'll be like the Beatles album. What was it, Sgt. Pepper, where they had all these faces of everybody there? That's what it'll be like. Interesting item crossed our desk this morning. And a good item, I might say. The FIBT, which is the governing body for bobsled, has opened the four-man competition to mixed gender teams, which essentially means that you could now have a team consisting of a female pilot driving the sled and men push starting the bobsled. Now, it's the rule is, or the change is in its infancy a little bit. It is expected to be in place for the start of this season, which is December. Actually, the first race is in Calgary, December 15th to 21st, and it could be in place for those World Cup races. Of course, the next Winter Olympics are in Pyeongchang, South Korea, and I would have to think that unless I can't imagine it wouldn't be in place at Pyeongchang. And for those of you who aren't familiar with bobsled, women's competition has a two-person bobsled. Men's competition has two men and four men. So this is clearly something that will develop. I would imagine if you really wanted to, you could have two women in the sled, two men in the sled. It just depends. It's a fascinating decision, and I think a decision that shows an incredible amount of foresight for an organization that sometimes can move a little slowly. I know one person who's really happy about this, Kaylee Humphrey. She's a two-time Olympic champion. And I think this has probably just increased her chances of getting a couple more medals. And Kaylee Humphreys joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. You're going to have to build an entire new shelf, Kaylee, or an entire new display case if this keeps up.
Well, we'll see. I mean, four-man competition is a lot tougher. I'm anticipating definitely a bumpy road along the way. And I mean, it's challenging beyond belief, but I'm super, super excited. I mean, I've been pushing for this for over a year now and chatting with our FIBT president and the VP of sport and everybody and talking to the other girls. So a proposal went in, and much to my delight this morning, getting an email saying it has been approved. I could not be happier.
So what are we looking at here? Could we have a sled with, three women and a male driver, two women and two men? Are there any guidelines at all or any rules as to how this will gradually be worked in?
I think, like you had said earlier, it's definitely still in the infancy. So there's going to be a lot that's going to have to be worked out. The problem is men's foreman is an extremely difficult challenge, and the competition is extremely, extremely fierce. And I mean, I know putting myself in the sled with three other guys can still be competition. I know sticking Alana Myers from the U.S. in there as well, athletically, we can keep up. You cross-gender too much, and again, the starts in our sport are one-third of what it takes to win a race, and they are critical. Each and every day that passes, they're getting more and more important. And so you stick too many girls in there with, you know, four huge, big, strong guys, and you're going to be at a disadvantage. So it's definitely going to be a balance, one that every team is going to have to look at. I am just super excited that the opportunity now is available, and that, you know, I can go forward, and I plan on having three guys in my team for this year. But just having the opportunity to compete in another event and a different challenge and strengthen my skills as a bobsleigh pilot.
Kaylee Humphreys joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. How often have you driven a four-man sled?
I've driven it a few times. I drove last year in Whistler, had a couple trips down actually with some of Canada's pilots, and an FIBT jury member. And I've driven here in Calgary as well. So it's really just so far been for fun because we haven't had the opportunity to even think about competing. So a lot of women around the world haven't even thought about this process. It's something that I literally have been dreaming of for the last couple of years. Definitely an avenue that, again, not everyone in the world is ready for, but I feel like women in sport and bobsleigh specifically, there are a number of us that are ready for this challenge, and you know, we're going to face it head on. But actually driving specifically, there's going to be a learning curve, definitely, but I've been driving a sled now for this will be my ninth season in two men alone. I've been to every track around the world, and I've competed on every stage possible. And so a challenge that I think is necessary, and one that I'm willing and ready to take on, which is why I put the proposal forward. And so happy they accepted. Yay!
Well, it sounds like a real challenge. It's a heavier sled. Can you describe maybe for the layperson the difference between driving a four-man sled and driving a two-man sled, just in terms, obviously it's heavier, it's longer, but in terms of what you have to do as a driver, it's got to be a little different, isn't it?
It definitely is different, hence why it's a whole, you know, a whole different race, and there are different challenges. And in regards to driving a sled, some guys are better driving two-man versus four-man. The sled is longer, the weight difference is quite drastic, and you also have three other guys within the sled, or two other men instead of two men. If I'm going to compare it, it's going to be like driving a big truck to a little tiny race car. You know, with a smaller vehicle, the handling's a bit different. The sled will respond differently. You're going to be able to save yourself when you get in certain situations. It handles a lot more responsive. In a four-man, you have to be a lot more precise. Everything takes a split second longer. You can't just turn and the sled goes weight times with velocity, G-force. Everything takes that split second, and you have to be a lot more precise, or, you know, things could happen. And so it's definitely going to be learning how to drive a four-man on all the different tracks. I'm aware of what it takes to drive a four-man. I've been around the four-man teams for years, and, you know, team bonding, all of that is going to be a big part into the race. There's a whole bunch that goes into four-man versus two-man, and it's a completely different beast. So it's the actual driving aspect, though. I mean, you still pull left and right with the hands, and where you steer is still the same spot, but the feeling is going to be different because it's amplified by weight and velocity and G-force and strength.
Kaylee Humphreys joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Has this been universally accepted by all the associations? Because, I mean, Kaylee, you know as well as I do, some countries are a little more conservative than others. And I'm thinking of a country like Germany. It's just, it's such a political game, sort of putting together the sleds, right, for each country. Now you're introducing female competitors. Is there a chance that, quite frankly, there might be male competitors whose nose will be able to join as a result of this?
I think there definitely is. I mean, with every major decision, this is history that's being written right now. And the fact that the FIBT is our governing body is open to this change, is absolutely fantastic. The fact that, you know, I'm able to go to our president and say, look, I think there's room for this and this needs to happen, and they're willing to, you know, talk about it. Again, I don't think you're going to make everybody in the whole entire world happy with this decision.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a decision that obviously enough countries and enough federations and or, you know, our governing body feels it just as strongly as I do that a change needs to happen and that this can be amazing. This can be a great thing. And that's the only thing that I need.
Your success in the two women bobsled and the two man bobsled at the Olympics and at the World Cup, is there any concern on your part that adding this to your workload might take away from that dominance in the women's bobsleigh?
Definitely, there's definitely that concern. I also have to be aware that without challenges. Without, you know, stepping forward, my time in the sport has been absolutely amazing, and I've had the opportunity, you know, to take it from starting up to, you know, being two-time world and Olympic champion. But I'm ready, and I need a new challenge. I think this is something that the sport is ready for as well, and it's not just me. You've got, you know, Lana Myers from the States. Mm-hmm. Her and I have pushed each other over the last couple of years. Competition in women's two-man is definitely high. And I definitely don't have it in the bag every single time. But if I want to continue to grow and learn, if I sit still, I know there's going to be people gunning for me. That target is getting bigger and bigger each and every year. And I've got to challenge myself. And the fact that the sport realizes and that it's not just me and there's other women around the world that are ready. You know, we're ready for this challenge, and we are accepting it wholeheartedly. And, it'll be a great thing. At the end of the day, too, it's about leaving a legacy. And
right.
I know when I started this journey, you know, I've been dominant for so long, and, you know, I fully plan on it continuing. I'm doing another 4 years, and, you know, the challenge of men's format is there, and there's going to be some bumps. I understand the sport and everything that goes into it. This isn't something that was taken lightly. It's not just something that happened on a whim. It's something that thought and process has gone to and has taken, you know, years and years of pushing. But at the end of the day, I know when I want to leave this sport, I want to leave it better than when I found it, better than when I came in and trying to help girls get women's four men in there. This is a step in that direction, and we'll see where it goes.
Why has there not been a women's format? I mean, that sounds like a kind of a silly question, but you know, it's kind of one of those things I've wondered about. I mean, I don't know, make the sleds lighter. It's always kind of surprised me that the next step wouldn't be having women's for a woman sled.
Yeah. Women's bobsled is still fairly new. I mean, 2002 was the first Olympics that we were competing in.
That's right.
So it hasn't been around that long. I know definitely there are challenges with other nations and funds. That's a big part for a lot of nations. Our sport is definitely not cheap by any means. The shipping of the sled, the cost of the sled, the cost of the equipment. And it's not exactly a sport that's easily accessible and that everybody enjoys. It definitely is, you know, a high intensity sport, and it's not for the faint of heart by any means. And so getting the girls and getting the funds together, four men, again, you're adding more people, there's more travel. And until you have a bit of that base, it makes it challenging for the federation to put forth a movement, to add a whole nother event. If there's only going to be four women's teams around the world,
mm-hmm.
again, it's, you can't really warrant putting, you know, a whole different event together and starting. And so this will hopefully allow or will bridge the gap, and we'll get more women involved in the sport. And then hopefully, you know, through sponsorship and through everything else, the dollar goes up and our sport becomes a bit more known. We can get more girls out, and then we can transition into solely women's for men.
I should ask you, you do plan on racing too in the women's bobsleigh as well as the four-man. Like, you'll be able to do that in the course of the average World Cup competition, right? It works out, the schedules work out?
The schedules work out. The FIBT is aware of that. I mean, men do it. They compete in two and then as well as four. It's going to be back-to-back racing, which is something that we as women are not used to. Normally, we just have the one day of competition, but it's not something we aren't unaware of. I mean, when we compete at the World Championships or an Olympic Games, it's 2 days back to back. So basically for us, it's going to be, you know, a World Championship or an Olympic competition every single time we step out on the ice. You're going to have two men one day and four men the next day. And so it's, a challenge that I find extremely exciting and I'm ready to take on.
Kaylee, congratulations on this. I know it's something that people at the FIBT have been working on. I'm glad it turned out. I'm glad it worked out for you. And always good to talk to you. Have a great remainder of the summer before you get back into competition.
Thank you very much.
Take care. That is Kaylee Humphreys, 2-time Olympic gold medalist. As I've said, probably our most dominant female athlete in terms of her sport. And so there you go. So there will be female competitors in the women's or in the four-man bobsled. I'm going to have to stop. Can't call four-man bobsled anymore. Kaylee Humphreys will put together a team. She'll be driving. There'll be three men in the sled as well. And ultimately, you heard her say, it is a move towards having four women bobsled. And congratulations to Kaylee Humphreys. I know that there have been, from covering bobsled, there are a lot of women in that sport who, A, are more than capable of driving the sled, but also, given the level of athleticism in among the women's competitors in bobsled, you know, four women bobsled, it's just a matter of time before it's put in place. Now, the athletes are in that, the women bobsled athletes are just tremendous, tremendous athletes to watch. And it's a great move on the part of the FIBT. And Kaylee Humphreys has probably figured out another way to win a couple of gold medals out of this. Toronto FC gets back on the pitch Saturday against the Portland Timbers. Lots of news around TFC, of course. BMO Field's expansion is underway. The diagrams look tremendous. The drawings, the artist's renderings look tremendous. Jermaine Defoe is back training with the team. Will not, at least we've been led to believe, will not be ready to play against Portland. And oh yeah, there's this small matter of the Gardner being shut for the weekend. Tim Bezbachenko is general manager of Toronto FC. You can follow him on Twitter at tbez10. Tim Bezbachenko joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Tim, thanks so much for doing this. First question before we talk about the team. I know you're asking fans, TFC is asking fans to get down there early. When will the gates be open? And, you know, will concessions be open earlier than usual? How are you going to handle the issue that's going to be created by the Gardner closure?
Yeah, so first, thanks for having me, Jeff. We just encourage the fans to get down there early. What we do is we open up for sort of the fans right outside the stadium, our Budweiser beer tent, so they can go and get there early and participate in sort of our soccer fest celebration outside the stadium. But for the most part, it's incumbent upon the fans just to get down there early, you know, take Lakeshore, whatever routes. I think you can go on our website and actually have sort of guidelines for how to get down to the stadium early, but use public transportation and just be smart about it.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of information on the website. I'm just taking a look at it right now, and I would urge fans, if you at all have any questions about how you're going to get down there, go to the website. It'll give you all the information you need, and it's just something. It's something everybody's had to deal with the Gardner this summer. I know that the Blue Jays will tell you that the Gardner's certainly had an impact on some of their attendance as well.
You know what I've done is also, you know, get down into Liberty Village. I think there's a lot of restaurants and bars in Liberty Village.
Yes.
And it's a really fun atmosphere. And then, I meet with our supporters, our fans early, and I get over and I just walk under the train tracks. It's a really good environment.
That's actually when I'm going to matches, that's what I do too. I just find a place to park there, grab something to eat, go for a beer, and walk across. It is a great environment. That's actually, that's great advice. So, where do we stand with Jermaine Defoe right now? He's back with the team. He will not be ready to play this weekend, obviously.
No, he's still, you know, still nursing a growing injury. He was, you know, been back over in the UK, seen his specialist as well as doctors at our sort of partner club in Tottenham over the past month. But he's at a position now where we have him back. He's running. He's not necessarily moving laterally yet. I think that's what he'll do this week, even today. And then we'll get him back on the pitch next week and hopefully get some minutes, you know, certainly some minutes against LA. And I know he's excited, and that's been his target game all along.
How committed is he? I mean, I saw the news conference, and he's saying the right things, and it certainly seems, and you know, I've spoken to people in England, and they said the one thing about Jermaine is when he's on the pitch, he's 100% there. He's committed. He doesn't half-ass it when he's out in the pitch. How committed do you think Jermaine is to seeing this season through and seeing that contract through?
Yeah. No, I think this is something that we're learning in North America about the global game of soccer, which is there's these unique things called transfer windows, and you can't sort of switch countries except for during these two periods during the year, in January and in the summer. And during these periods, teams make wild offers, and teams go out, especially when they're desperate, and try to find talent to fill in their gaps on their teams. And when you have a league like EPL that's fiercely competitive with no salary caps, you have teams that are willing to go to great lengths to get, you know, the best players around the world. And, you know, we're fortunate to have one on our team in Jermaine Defoe, and you have someone like a Harry Redknapp who formerly coached him at different clubs who wants him back. So you have speculation, you have excitement, you have teams looking to improve their roster. And so we will receive transfer offers in any particular transfer window for more players than just Jermaine. And it happened this summer, and we decided to, you know, we politely declined the offer because we're committed to making the playoffs this year. So we're committed. I know Jermaine's committed. This is nothing new for him, and that's what he said yesterday. And it's not just a talk. You know, he's excited to be back, and you could tell by his body language and everything that he wants to participate in the, you know, MLS playoffs.
You know, Tim, why couldn't he do something? And I'm reading John Molinaro's piece right now. I mean, Robbie Keane's managed to have sort of a foot in both camps, and I think Thierry Henry went back to Arsenal for a bit while he was playing at MLS. Could you see Jermaine doing that, going out on loan in the off season?
Yeah, it's a possibility. Actually, when I was at the league office, I did. You know, David Beckham went back and actually trained.
That's right. Yeah,
at Tottenham, and I remember pulling an all-nighter to get Henry back to Arsenal for an FA Cup match, which he scored in. Mm-hmm. It was a tremendous night for him and for Arsene Wenger, if I recall. Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. It's something we discussed. I know, you know, Clint Dempsey has, you know, they've talked about him going back. So keeping our guys fresh, keeping them sharp during the off season are two things we have to balance, right? You want them to be fresh, you know, when they come back, but you also want them to be sharp. So training stints are something that are very normal in the world of soccer.
Where is this club right now as far as in your mind, as far as positioning itself for a playoff run? I mean, you've got the new coach in place, Greg. He's obviously had an impact. The team seems to be a much more up-tempo feel to the team. Where do you think this team is right now? And what realistically has to happen, Tim, for this club to make the playoffs?
Yeah, just for the listeners, we're seventh now in the Eastern Conference, the top out of 10. But we have a game in hand. The top five clubs make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So we have a game in hand. We're 1 point behind sixth place and 3 points behind Columbus and four behind New York and four. So if we win this weekend, we'll be in the playoffs, assuming you know, a couple results go our way. But the game in hand is really important to know. So we have six games, three home, three away. If we win that game that we have in hand on all these teams, we are in the playoffs. So it's really just about taking care of business at home and hopefully picking up a point or three on the road. And that's just like, that's, you know, not dissimilar to the rest of the year. If you can do that, then you make the playoffs in our league. And we feel like we're in a great position now. We got bodies healthy. Greg, you know, it was difficult for him because the week he came into the position, he had a midweek game and a week on Saturday. So he didn't really get to train with the team until our home game, we are home leading up to our Chicago game. So now Greg's had our team for a few weeks now. I think the fans saw our sort of a little glimpse of what he's about against our, you know, when we played Chivas this last weekend. And hopefully we can continue that with a win against Portland this weekend.
Tim, it was great of you to do this today. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Take care. That is Tim Bezbachenko. He's general manager of Toronto FC. They will play the Portland Timbers this weekend. A great bit of advice from Tim. The Gardner is going to be closed all weekend. Go on Toronto FC's website. There's information there on how to get to BMO Field. The TFC wants you to get there early. If you're taking the Lakeshore, plan in advance. And Tim had the best idea, having done this myself. Go to the area around Liberty Village. Find a place to park. Get there early. Have a bite to eat. Maybe have a couple of cold ones. There'll be a ton of TFC fans down there. There's lots, and I mean lots, of very cool restaurants and bars. Make it a day out. Go there early. Walk to BMO Field. It's not that far. There'll be a ton of people walking with you. It's a great idea from Tim Bezbachenko. Liberty Village would appear to be the way to go. Park your car, have something to eat, walk to the match. It's a great idea. Sportsnet, the magazine's NHL preview is out. It's a 100-page guide to the 2014-2015 season, the all-hockey special. I'm looking at the cover right now. The only thing I would have done differently is I would have put Jonathan Toews, well, he's right above the NHL logo, I would have put him in the middle and just had the rest of the hockey universe. Sorry. I mean, my affection for Jonathan Toews is really getting a bit almost uncomfortable, isn't it, Travis? I think it's probably the way I fist bumped the picture of Jonathan Toews in the elevator door here at the Rogers building. That's probably a little uncomfortable, isn't it? Yeah, I probably will stop doing that. Yeah, Jamie Benn has got prime real estate. Anyhow, it's a terrific magazine. It's a 100-page guide to the 2014-2015 season. Love the cover. It is. It's like the Sergeant Pepper's cover. You know what? There's probably a picture of Doug McLean in here someplace. We just can't find it. And if there isn't, there should be. Ryan Dixon is a senior writer for Sportsnet magazine. You can follow him on Twitter, at Dixon on Sports. He's going to join us in studio. We're going to discuss the preview issue of the magazine. And we'll discuss Ryan's articles as well on Mark Bergevin's reload in Montreal, Victor Hedman's breakout in Tampa Bay, and the similarities between the Blackhawks and the Kings. This is a great, great, great edition of the magazine. It's on newsstands right now, 100-page guide to the 2014-2015 season. Ryan Dixon will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We are back. Kevin Barker's around here someplace, so it must mean that Baseball Central at noon is just around the corner, which would make sense because it is 11:38. John Gibbons is going to join us today. I'm just going to ask him why he's playing Munenori Kawasaki. You think Gibby will give me an answer? Why are you doing it? I bet he will. Ryan Dixon's a senior writer, senior editor, senior everything, Sportsnet. He joins me in studio. How many days to puck drop?
13.
There you go.
I saw it on Twitter. I saw someone tweet the sign we have here. That's what it actually was.
They've been doing that. Yeah, we've got signs everywhere around here that tells us how many days until puck drop. You can imagine that the Rogers folks are getting a little excited about the start of the NHL season. So are all of us. Sportsnet magazine has got its 100-page guide the 2014-2015 NHL season on the market right now. Like I said, it's like sort of a Sgt. Pepper's cover, right? There's every conceivable hockey player you can find on the front of it. Jonathan Toews should be given much more.
Should have put him right in the middle.
Yes, and actually, I would have put most of the Blackhawks right in the middle. But anyhow, that's a personal bias. And Ryan, you've written three stories for the magazine, but I want to talk about just the preview in general. What type of NHL season do you think we're going to see this year?
That's an interesting question. What type of season? Well, I guess it is unique somewhat in that 2 years ago, we obviously had a lockout. 1 year ago, we had the Olympics. So it might be a bit of a boring answer, but we're going to have a regular season, which I'm sure actually makes all parties pretty happy that there's no condensed schedule, i.e. as you have with the Olympics. And then obviously what happens in the lockout, no one ever wants to see that. So, I guess we'll get back to, it's actually business as usual kind of for the first time in 2 years. No, talk of making Olympic teams for certain guys dominating the first half of the season. I think more and more what we're, I don't know if it answers the question about what kind of season we're going to see, but I would say what kind of league are we seeing? Mm-hmm. It is definitely moving more and more towards that speed and skill base where I feel like this has sort of shown its head a little bit before, surfaced a bit, but then been forced back down. Whereas I now feel like, put it this way, if you watch the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs kick off the season the last however many years, you knew that in the first period, in the second period, probably in the third period, Cole Nor and George Parros or George LaRocque and someone else,
there was going to be a fight.
It was going to happen. And you knew it was just because it was the first night and it was going to be a big show. And when they played on the last game of the season, you probably weren't going to see that stuff. But I feel like we're getting to a point where now we may not even see that on night one, teams just can't afford to carry those guys on fourth lines. You need a fast, headsy guy who's 22 years old who can give you a reliable 10 minutes. So that's kind of exciting to think that I do think the league is officially breaking that way.
Well, and, a couple of people have made the point in the past couple of days. Just take a look at some of the players who haven't been able to get jobs yet. They're tough guys who aren't getting work because they're just not that good.
And watch the training camp games and listen to some of the commentators say, certainly back in their day, whether it's, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but even a couple years ago, you could try and fight your way onto a team. You watch a preseason game and it was just, there was someone out there who was going to just, be a missile going after another tough guy to try and get their chance to prove that they could fight their way into the NHL. And I mean, granted, I haven't seen a ton of the preseason games, but I mean, just paying attention, I don't feel like that's really happening anymore. I don't feel like there's people out there who think, the way I'm going to get on this team is by proving I'll fight anyone, anytime, any place. So again, that speaks to the kind of player who can win those bottom of the roster jobs and how the nature of those roles are changing.
Well, I think we saw that with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think the realization last year that this organization really undervalued what Leo Komarov gave them as a kind of a bottom six forward compared to what guys like Cole Nor were giving them. I think there's a realization now that it's almost, Ryan, as if we've gone towards a new definition of toughness in the NHL. Toughness isn't necessarily whether or not you can beat the hell out of somebody else. It's, can you be forced off the puck? Can you go from playing 4.5 minutes a game to 8 minutes a game all of a sudden because somebody's here? I mean, there's a toughness, a redefining of toughness in the NHL, which I think is probably going to make it a better game at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything you said, I agree with 100%. It is a new definition. It's, more about whether you can, absorb that hit to make a play, or like you said, how strong you are on the puck and whether you can keep it on your stick when you're grinding along the boards. It's definitely exciting to see, and maybe it took a little while, but good on the teams for evolving.
Ryan Dixon joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Ryan's a senior writer with Sportsnet, the magazine. So one of your articles is on the Montreal in the magazine is on the Montreal Canadiens and Mark Bergevin's. You call it's. I love the title "Lion Cubs in Winter." Mark Bergevin, as you say, went all in the future. It's really kind of an interesting notion the way Montreal's approaching this, isn't it? It's. I would think it's probably reflective of the fact that Mark Bergevin has looked at this team and said, we've got a really special group of young players here, which they do, don't they? This is a different class than we've seen in Montreal for some time.
I would say that, yeah. I mean, I think it's funny. I mean, the story is essentially about, you know, the decision to let Brian Gionta, their former captain, mm-hmm. walk at 35, to trade Josh Georges to the same Buffalo team. You know, on one hand, what Mark Bergevin did this summer is kind of a natural. And on the other hand, though, as I say, it still takes guts because he let two guys, you know, in the aftermath of his team going to the East Final, which by pretty much any team's measure is a good season. You know, he could have kind of sat back and said, hey, we like where we're going. You know, he didn't have to open himself up to the criticism that could come with saying, I'm going to take a person like Josh Georges, who is, you know, very well liked and respected for what he does on the ice in terms of being a guy who always shows up. I'm going to trade that guy to essentially clear space for someone who is a fancy stats darling, Tom Gilbert, coming mm-hmm. in from Florida as a UFA. I'm going to let our captain, Brian Gionta, walk because, in truth, he really gives us a hard up and down every night, but only about 40 points a year. And we're going to open up some spots maybe for some young kids to push. But yeah, really what he did was look at that core, I think, of Max Pacioretty, PK Subban, Carey Price, obviously he's been there for a while now, Brendan Gallagher, and say, you know, this, it's clearly their time. And Subban's 25, Pacioretty is 25. I think Gallagher's 22. And what I actually think is the real key for Montreal this year is Alex Galchenyuk, their 20-year-old, mm-hmm. Possibly center, possibly winger. We'll see if they move him to the middle where he played junior. I mean, the Canadiens did have a good season last year, but, you know, they still kind of start the year maybe at the top, but still in that pack of teams that you say, well, they could make the playoffs, but, you know, it's nothing is absolutely assured. So for them, if someone like Galchenyuk, you know, who you draft third overall to right near the top of the table, you obviously have high hopes. If in his third year he can take a big step forward, that's going to be monumental for them. But absolutely, I mean, Bergevin's summer was clearly taking the franchise keys and saying, here you go, PK. Here you go, Max. You know, you guys, it's your time. Run with it.
It's funny. One of the articles you did is comparing the Blackhawks to the Kings and how they're similar but also different. And I was talking to a friend of mine who covers baseball. He's also a big hockey fan. And he was making the point that he sees the Blackhawks and the Kings a little bit like the Red Sox and Yankees. It's like they're going to be in that conference. That's where the push and pull is going to be. Okay, you do this, we're going to do this. Okay, you did this, we're going to do this. And that's what it's turned into, hasn't it? They're kind of the reference point for each other now.
Yeah, I mean, as I say in the story, they're basically like two heavyweights cresting at the same time, you know? And what makes it fun for all of us is they have different styles. The Kings, as any number of people will tell you, don't get enough credit, especially last year, for how fast and skilled they mm-hmm. are, no doubt. But, you know, they're the big team that's really going to lean on you. And when you combine that with some guys who can move, that's why they've won a couple Stanley Cups. You know, Chicago, probably more of that emphasis on speed. But again, I mean, you know, so many guys up and down. It's not just the top. It's the guys at the bottom. I mean, Norm McIver, their assistant GM, was saying to me, he thinks basically what tipped the balance last year when they lost to L.A. was L.A. goes out and gets Gabrick, and mm-hmm. they have the emergence of Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson. And if you look back to Chicago's 2013 team, when they beat them, you know, they lost guys like Victor Stahlberg and Michael Frolik and Dave Bolin. I mean, guys that might not necessarily pop as having the most impact, but when they're out there on the third and fourth lines, the other teams are getting burned here mm-hmm. and there because they're such quick players. And that, you know, that's still the Blackhawks' MO. So yeah, there's a real fun back and forth. And as Mark Kelly, the director of scouting for the Blackhawks, was saying, you know, were two, the two armies march differently, but it works for both of us. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's, there's a lot to it. And I mean, you look at the West, it's such a death match out there. There's no two ways about it, but you know, ultimately, the only thing that you, I feel like works against Chicago and LA is they've already been through so much. They've already played so much hockey that you wonder, is this the year the St. Louis Blues or the Anaheim Ducks? But really, you know, Chicago and LA are probably still the teams with the fewest amount of question marks.
What type of an impact do you think Brad Richards is going to have in Chicago?
I'll be really curious, to be honest with you, because we have talked so much about how the game is speeding up and foot speed isn't Richards' thing, mm-hmm. certainly not at this point. You know, he obviously slots in there as the second line guy behind Jonathan Toews. I guess I still have modest expectations. Like, I don't think we're all going to be sitting here going, wow, how could the Rangers have let him go? But I mean, in a good situation like that, where his role is defined from the very beginning, I don't think the Blackhawks have, you know, put it in terms of points. Like, I don't think anyone thinks he's coming back with 78 mm-hmm. points, but would they take 50, you know, seven? Probably. So yeah, it certainly, when you looked around the league, Chicago's had that hole in the number two spot for a while. They've kind of won their cups without a number two guy, depending on what you think of Dave Boland in the playoffs. And they have a young fella coming up, Tara Vinen, who was the captain of the Finnish team, by all accounts should be great, but maybe isn't great yet. Mm-hmm. It was a great match. I definitely thought, you know, there was, it was easy to see why both sides were able to come together on 1 year deal there. So,
well, it also made, I mean, the Blackhawks had to watch, they're up against the salary cap. So it made,
that's right.
They were looking for a bargain essentially.
Absolutely.
And they found one.
Yeah.
The magazine, it looks terrific. As I said, it is the 100 page guide to the 2014-2015 season. Sportsnet magazine, the all hockey special on newsstands now. Ryan Dixon, thanks so much for joining us today. This, I think people are going to be quite taken with this. And we didn't even touch on the hometown hockey stuff, which
is going
to be a lot of fun.
You got 13 days to read it, then you got to start watching hockey.
And I want to know what you guys wrote about Selkirk. That interests me.
Do you have a Selkirk connection?
I'm from a small town in Manitoba, and Selkirk has always been in Manitoba. It's been like the big tier two junior hockey power. The Selkirk Steelers are just dominant.
Well, when I was a young buck coming up, cutting my teeth, I worked in Portage La Prairie, Manitoba.
There you go. Covered
the MJ final between Selkirk and Portage, and the Portage boys won that year and went to all the way to the RBC Cup, actually.
Portage La Prairie.
There you go.
Ryan, thanks so much for doing this.
All right, my pleasure.
Again, it is the All Hockey Special, Sportsnet Magazine's 100-page guide to the NHL season. It's time for Baseball Central. We'll be back at noon.